Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is one of an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Over the past 10 years, Richmond's cultural art scene has been quietly growing, attracting numerous talented artists with national and international reputations. Twice a month, on the first and third Mondays, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're having lunch with Myron Helfgott. Myron, welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Well, I guess you don't have me, but
well, we could have
the
you,
opportunity to
to be had.
Yeah,
yes,
there we
right,
go.
Exactly. You and I were talking before the show about coming up with some. You said, you know, this interview is only going to be as good as the questions, and unfortunately, I don't have any. So that gives us about 29 minutes, 30 seconds. More to do this. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to know you is I've known you for years. I know a little bit about your art and your work. But why don't you tell the folks who are listening just a little bit about your background rather than having
background.
Me sort of read
Holy
a resume.
Cow.
So they'll know that they're listening to a national and international reputed.
Actually, I have this great statement. If we could take a break for a second, I'm putting on pause. I'm going to read this thing.
Okay,
hold on. Out there,
can you hold out there in radio land?
Go get a coffee, okay?
Yeah, really.
Okay, let's see. I had this written. I have no idea why or when I wrote it, but this is it. A brief history of Myron. If it's true that one can only know by unknowing, I must have been brilliant by the time I graduated from high school. And like the proverbial cork on the water, I stumbled into my future rather than planned it. I could have just as easily been an investment banker, an insurance salesman, as a sculptor. Well, maybe not an investment banker. I got a university education because my father bribed me to go to the university. I became a sculptor because my wife bought me a set of wood carving tools. My first teaching job came about without my applying for it. I landed in Richmond because I was fired from an earlier teaching position. I had a family and needed a job. Like so many of the rest of us, I arrived assuming I'd be in Richmond a few years and move on. That was in 1968. But having had the good fortune of working with a group of people that not only became my peers but also my teachers, leaving Richmond was not an option. The cork was happy in this pond.
So, if you're a cork in a pond, right, how does that apply to your art?
Well, it depends on the size of the pond and how old the cork is.
I mean, what you're saying is, and I guess there's truth. There's a lot of truth to that. But what you're saying is, essentially, is that...
I didn't choose to be an artist.
Well, is it that simple?
I think so.
Or did you learn early on that it's not all about ego and drive, and that a lot of life is about really floating like a cork?
Well,
I mean, there's a certain amount of wisdom in that.
Well, yes, and I've come to realize that one doesn't plan their lives because how do you plan something you've never done before? So you have to kind of discover things you want to do, and sometimes not only discover what you want to do, it's the least bad option.
But it sounds like making art. I mean, that's what I'm saying. What you just read sounds like what I've heard people talk about in terms. Yes.
I was, as I said.
And you said in discovering.
Well, yeah, right. I had when I got into sculpture, I was actually working on a project with Bucky Fuller.
Oh, really?
What were you
doing with Bucky Fuller?
Well, I'd studied with him for years, and so there was a project which became to be known as the World
Game. So this is the same Buckminster Fuller, the Dome,
Buckminster
Fuller.
Yeah, the same guy.
All right, just so long as...
So he's traveling around a lot, so he has his lieutenant. Uh-huh. And so there was a 13 of us, I believe, that were part of this project. And I didn't get along with the lieutenant very well, and so he and I got into these arguments, and I was not enjoying that. But at the same time, because my wife had given me the set of wood carving tools, I was obligated to actually make some sculptures, and I found myself enjoying that a whole lot more, and I just started doing it more. And
so how does Bucky Fuller fit into this?
Because that's what I wanted to stop doing. So, and actually, I studied with Bucky. I went to architecture school for 3 years, went to design school for 3 years.
The
design school, which was a second-generation Bauhaus school,
right.
Bucky would be there all the time. He eventually came and lived in Carbondale, and his wife moved there, and he had his office there, and his home was there. And
okay, so you were in Carbondale, Illinois.
Yeah.
All right.
That's how Bucky comes into it.
So you had a chance to study with Buckminster Fuller.
I did study with
Buckminster. Okay. Yeah. And that was around the issue of architecture?
No, it was, to be very frank, what it was with having free labor, having Bucky have free labor to make some of his models? Yeah, in fact, I exhibited the Museum of Modern Art, by the way, but under Bucky's name.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, so there you were carving away with your tools, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, what did that lead to?
That led to, it gets complicated and kind of boring. What it led to was my teacher was the student of a fellow who was running the art department at Northern Illinois University. Mm-hmm. So he came down and liked what I was doing, and he told me that if I needed some adjunct teaching, that see him and
right.
get me to. I said, great. So I applied for a couple of jobs, and remember the first job I applied for was at Minot, North Dakota. And when I got the rejection letter from that job, my wife and I went out and celebrated. I mean, you know, here she's pregnant, and said, we're going to have a kid, and I need the job. So I went up to see this guy at Northern Illinois. On the Friday before school started, he said, I was trying to get a hold of you. I have a job for you. And that's how I got
the
job. That's how I started.
So that job you got fired from, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the only job you ever got fired from, I guess.
No.
No?
It was the only teaching job I ever got fired from.
Okay. And that landed you in Richmond. But
that landed me in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania?
And then I came to Richmond.
Okay, but what I really wanted to talk about was some of the things you've done,
okay.
Some of the art you've made.
Okay,
thinking back on your career,
career would not be the word I would use.
What word would you use?
Although the IRS would refer to it as hobby, and I can't think of it as a career. It's just sort of something I do. I go to work every morning, you know. Uh-huh. Until cocktail hour.
What was the first show like that you had? I mean, the first sort of memorable, you know?
I don't remember. I've had a lot of shows. Not a lot of sales, I have to say that. People, mm-hmm. That's one nice thing about the university, is that that you can make a nice living and don't have to sell work.
Right.
I never felt like I was in small business. You know, I had to
bothered you? That never...
No, it's not really. I mean, the
whole thing about, you know, the artist in our culture, the, you know, the conflict between being a capitalist and sort of the absolute opposite of that, which sometimes, of course, is being an artist, and the way our culture drives everyone, and especially these days, drives artists to be, quote, successful, unquote.
Yeah.
You're saying that never played a part in...
It probably did at one point, but mm-hmm. then you grow up and realize that that any kind of fame is going to be fleeting.
Right.
That it really is a matter of ego, you know, just the kind of recognition you're talking about. And probably the most important thing is that life is short, and you better enjoy yourself while you're here.
So why make art?
Well, because
I mean, if you're not making it, and you and I understand that's a naive concept, but I think a lot of people listening.
I think it's a very good question, and it's such a good question. I'm not sure I can answer it. I can, mm-hmm. I can address it, but not answer it.
Right.
Number of reasons, and the reason I'm somewhat hesitant, I don't want you or the listeners to think that I'm not concerned about the viewer when I make it. I am concerned about the viewer. But
right.
there are issues in my life that I want to try to work out.
Right.
and that the best way I know to keep it on my mind and work it out is through using it as content for the art I'm making.
Give me an example.
Okay, well, the last couple of pieces have dealt with the male-female dilemma. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's not as important as solving world hunger, but it's up there that
right.
somehow.
But it's important to you.
That gender A and gender B have been having a very difficult time getting together. I noticed in my
really?
In my particular past, it's been good. I think it'd be good for a while, and then they all seem to think the same thing, that, gee, you're really kind of nice. You're nearly what I want. And if I think you're trainable, I'm going to be able to change you a little bit and clean you up a little bit. And I think it's going to be fine. And that process of cleaning up it doesn't work out so well.
Really?
I mean, I'm about as clean as I want to be, I think.
So it's that... are you talking about compromise? Or are you talking about you're talking about not compromising?
Well, no. I mean, I'm different than I was 20 years ago. I mean, and
because of the women you've known?
I don't. Well, of course they play a role. Of course you can't help not being influenced and I'm. The one thing about getting older, and I have gotten a lot older these past 69 years, I guess.
Right.
But
it tends to happen.
And until you start getting ill, that's no fun. But until that point happens, getting older is great because A, you get I don't want to say smarter. You're not really smarter, but you have a bit more wisdom that you can take the information and you're.
Ego, you think you learn to roll with it more?
And plus your ego is not in it so much, and and you don't have to be right all the time.
Right.
And although I'm still right most of
99% of the time.
Yeah, but there's that 1%.
That 1%.
Yeah.
So we were talking about wandered a little bit here, but we were talking about your art and why you make art.
Yeah.
And you started to talk about a project you were working on that had to do with. At least one piece of it had to do with, you know, how do you negotiate these things called relationships, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the last piece I finished, and I do enjoy it a lot. And it starts out with a collection I've had going for a good while, and that is what women have told me.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, and of course, just like Joseph Brodsky has said in the past, and he said something to the effect that in a narrative, the story is less important than what is next to what. So as I put these statements next to one another, they become sexual or non-sexual depending on where they're placed, not because of necessarily their
what
content.
What things are you talking about?
Well, a statement like,
You're talking about statements.
Yeah, well, things that
not
women have
images,
told me.
Not
no. These are
statements. Are things people have told women have told you.
Yeah, like I don't have to do that anymore.
Okay.
Now, depending where that is, that could have a lot of meaning.
Right.
You know. So, so I've had this collection, and because my work is the last half a dozen years has been audio has been a component.
Mm-hmm.
I've had women record these statements, and I've put that, joined that with a series of seven Buddha heads. And so the name of the piece is Buddha Wisdom, What Women Have Told Me.
Uh-huh.
And so,
how do you join them with Buddha heads? What do you mean?
Well, there's two speakers, and that's talking, and then as you wander around, you're looking at the Buddha heads.
Okay. All right.
So if we're talking about the nature of the universe here, that's what...
Okay.
So that one is... And that one, did I learn anything from that one? I'm still working on the problem. I still haven't solved the problem.
What were you after? I mean, you weren't after just cynicism. I mean, silly things women have said to me.
That's silly. Are you kidding? No.
Although
I have to confess that I didn't have quite enough of them, so I had to write a bunch of them myself.
There needs to be a mirror there somewhere, I think.
Yeah, but Don't tell anybody.
I won't. I absolutely will not tell anybody. No, absolutely not. Well, let me just take a quick break here.
Okay.
This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM Indy Radio. It's radio for the rest of us, and we're talking to Myron Helfgott, and he has been a sculptor, ex-architect, professor at Virginia Commonwealth University for a number of years, is now retired, and we're talking about his work and really something sort of a similar thread that we've brought up with everybody we've talked to, sort of the why. You know, why art? Why not, you know, why not architecture? And we were talking a little bit about a piece that he's just done. What other things are you working on, or have you worked on
recently?
Let me
go back to something.
Sure.
You said, why art, why not architecture?
Mm-hmm.
And I still love architecture. I love architectural issues, problems. I love buildings. The one thing about art is I can do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have a setup where I do all the work myself. I have my computer. I have my printers. I have audio equipment, recording
equipment. Why is that important?
Because this way, of course you always have to make things complicated. Because the truth is, of course, I don't do all this myself. In fact, I really like doing it with other people.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. But with architecture, A, it takes way too much money to be able to actually carry things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't finish pieces. But when I said I don't do things myself, many of the things I don't do myself is things like pieces. One of the pieces I finished not too long ago was called A Questionnaire for Poets. And
mm-hmm.
I developed a questionnaire of 27 questions, and I selected four poets, and I sent them the questions, and I recorded their answers. I didn't write their answers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unfortunately, one of the poets was not living, which made it somewhat difficult. And
to get responses?
I've misplaced my Ouija board, and so... So I had to have a substitute in there. So
someone to sub for?
Yeah, the dead guy.
The dead guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense? How does that make sense?
I thought it was incredibly entertaining.
Did you? Does anybody know that this is
oh,
not?
Well, I haven't shown the piece yet, but it'll be on the label copy. So,
okay.
Yeah, you'll know it.
You'll know?
Yeah.
All right. So responses from a dead poet or not.
Yeah, well, in fact, the guy wasn't even a poet. He was a philosopher
mm-hmm.
with the same sort of wit that the poet had.
Right.
And the fellow was incredibly knowledgeable. And so his answers are the most entertaining of all the...
Even though they're not his answers?
No, there are his answers. He wrote the answers.
Oh, he wrote them? Oh, okay.
All right.
This is making more sense. Okay.
See, I
thought you just picked a dead guy and had somebody else talk for him. Okay.
Yeah, no, but...
Somebody else just read his answers.
No. Tim, are we together on this?
I don't think we are.
Okay. The dead guy never saw the questions.
Okay.
The philosopher... I sent the questions to the philosopher.
Ah.
He wrote the answers, and I recorded his answers... pretending that he was the poet.
The poet, okay. All right, okay, I got you.
Okay.
I got you. All right.
You're a little slow, aren't you, Tim? Jesus.
Well, Myron, I don't know about that. What other things? Nick and Tina comes to mind.
Oh, Nick and Tina. That changed my work considerably. And now let me describe Nick and Tina to the... people out there. I was flying on Christmas Day in, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. I was flying to Miami, and because I got the ticket at the last moment, I had to fly from Richmond to Detroit to Miami. It seems a little backwards, but
right.
this is our airline industry, and it's
yeah,
cool. Okay.
Makes sense somewhere.
So in Detroit, I changed planes, and I met Nick and Tina. And they, Tina works, the two of them work on the assembly line making Chevy trucks. And they were going to the Bahamas for vacation. Tina just had new breast augmentation surgery, and I can't tell you how proud she was.
Really?
And so the three of us sat together, and in addition to her new cleavage.
Right.
She was very, she wanted both Nick and me to notice her thong underwear. So every time she changed position, we were supposed to notice the thong underwear. And it was quite lovely.
So this was an attractive woman?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And
okay.
So then I always carry my equipment with me. I said, after Tina had been talking about things, asking when if I belonged to the Mile High Club and things of that sort, I asked if she would mind if I photographed her cleavage, and she said no, she'd love it. So I'm taking photographs of her cleavage. This ended up to be a piece, but the reason I talking about this is that one thing I discovered about that piece is that just documenting something very often is the best thing you possibly can do. So when I wrote the text for this and I'm describing the flight,
right.
I rejected any asides I was going to make, philosophical asides, and decided just to report this, just to say
what happened.
Funny,
it almost gets back to the piece you read about your life. Just
yeah.
This sort of, just let it happen. If you really see it, if you really experience it, what else do you have to say?
It's so terrific, and yeah. Nobody. And Tina is great. And some women were upset by this, thinking I was using Tina.
Sitting here thinking that I'm sure there are people sitting there listening, you know, who is this dirty old man and what the hell is
right.
he doing?
Well, the thing is, the reality is that I'm celebrating Tina. Tina was one of those people that you rarely meet that doesn't have their third eye glued mm-hmm. on themselves all the time, concerned about how they look, what they say, how they're going to appear to others. Tina was enjoying life like very few people you ever find enjoying life. And I loved Tina. I was crazy about Tina. And
right.
there was a joie de vivre that she has that you rarely find. So Tina is terrific. And I was crazy about Tina.
Was there a certain innocence there, you think?
It was just, I don't know if it was innocent or not. It was just that I'm going to have
I mean,
because
people
time.
Could say, you know, breast augmentation, you know, God, it's horrible. I mean, you know, you're yeah. talking about someone going under the knife,
yeah.
having themselves changed, costing thousands of dollars
yeah.
so that they'll be attractive to men.
Yeah.
I forgot to say
that she was also.
It's loaded
yeah.
with,
yeah.
you know, all kinds of, you know, PC issues, I guess.
Well, there was some parts of it I didn't really mention to you because I couldn't tell the whole story. She's also a part-time lap dancer.
Oh, she is.
So that
part-time lap dancer.
So that is So it helps in that part of her work.
All right. So she was comfortable with herself. But so what about the piece, though? I mean,
oh, the piece is just pictures.
Yeah.
Of
can
them.
You talk about it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
what you look at is there's about I don't know half dozen eight photos in frames. And they're all hanging on, they're on the shelves, on a wall, and in the background there's a big, when I say big, I'm thinking like 4 by 5 foot picture, the two of them, arms around each other in the Miami airport, mm-hmm. Terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the background for those. And then the audio is just me talking for
seven
and a half minutes describing the flight.
But she actually was willing to expose herself, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In,
I mean,
on the plane, yeah.
Which you were able to get.
Yes. But things I don't know what I was getting because I'm always looking at the camera.
So
I'm
you were interested in this in the spontaneity? You were interested in the lack of inhibition?
Well,
you were interested
first
in
I
the,
wasn't I didn't realize this was going to become a work of art. I just was
right.
taking the pictures because I am a dirty old man in addition
right,
to being
right,
other
right,
things.
Right, yeah.
And
they're great pictures too. It's a shame we're on radio here,
yeah.
you know.
But I was taking the photos, and it became a work after the fact, when I realized what I had.
How so? I mean, because a lot of times what I'm thinking is people that are listening to this are people who are sort of interested in art, but don't quite get it.
Well,
help them transition from dirty old man, you know, with a digital camera to art. I mean, how does that happen?
Chutzpah.
And for those of you who don't understand Yiddish,
the problem with art making is too often people confuse beauty with pretty.
And right.
So people think that art ought to be pretty.
Eye candy.
And I'm and it, if I find it much too boring.
Right.
So
all right. So pretty's out. Okay.
Yeah. And then beauty. If you talk about beauty, there's two different kinds.
Right.
Two definitions of beauty. One is a guy that defined by a guy named Dave Hickey, who thinks of beauty as something you insinuate into a work, like you're slathering cream cheese on a bagel.
Right.
And then there's Bucky, who, and this was an interesting quote. There was Bucky was at MIT, and one of the students asked him,
Buckminster Fuller,
if he was if he concerned himself with beauty when he was building his objects. He said no, but if the solution's not beautiful, I know it's not the right solution. So in that sense, beauty is a result of the thing that's been done. You don't put it into it while you're making it. And I think that most people don't realize.
Do you see
that.
This with Nick and Tina? Was that an issue?
It can only be beautiful for the viewer, and that is either it's beautiful for them or not. That
was
is,
it for you?
Oh, it was. It changed
what
my
was
work.
Beautiful.
Well,
what?
the way of art making. The way that I
okay, so it gets back to what you were talking about just seeing something, experiencing something intensely, doing the best you can to capture that experience without a lot of interpretation, and then presenting that and saying, here is...
Yeah, without using
which
my...
is amazing, because when I saw your piece, that's exactly what I got.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, it just jumped off the wall at me. It was like, this is all about... the moment.
Yeah,
this,
it is.
That's and it,
exactly
I mean, you got it. You
yeah.
really nailed it. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I think what happens is that too often we artists, when I say we use our own cliches
sure.
in making work,
sure.
and so we
right.
can't. So what you try to do is not use that cliche anymore, uh-huh. and so you try. And so in this case, it presented itself. It became fairly easy to do this piece.
Uh-huh.
I wrote the text. When I got down to Miami, I had my laptop. I wrote the text, and I sat down for a couple of hours, wrote the text, and after that, just cleaned it up ever so slightly.
Right.
The pictures were all there. Just blew them up. Simple.
Huh.
It was very simple.
So your work continues to be work that is more interested in. What do I want to say? Capturing, revealing what's already there.
You know, I have no idea what I'm trying to do. I mean, if I were to say this is what I'm trying to do, it'd be a bunch of BS.
I guess I'm getting a little cliched here, aren't I?
Well, it's just, I mean, every day you go to the studio and you try to discover something, not do something, and
right.
so one puts themselves in positions where. You don't know what's happening, and you make discoveries. And very often, more often than not, you don't make any discoveries. You
right.
just go through it, and the day is gone. And once you make a discovery, that's the kind of thing you use in the work. These new discoveries.
Huh.
Sometimes they're new for you, but not new for other people.
So. Right. Right. Huh. Okay. Let me just break off here again for a sec. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And our show is called Zero Hour, but we talk with artists about their work. We have the opportunity to talk to some pretty incredible people here because the art scene in Richmond has certainly grown and expanded exponentially over the last 10 years or so. But we're talking with Myron Helfgott, and Myron's been here about 122 years, is that right?
Close.
Yeah, close, about 122 years. Taught at VCU for a number of years and is a well-known sculptor and sounds like he might be sort of beginning to become a philosopher. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, if I learned how to spell, I think maybe I could do that.
Well, I mean a sculpture philosopher.
Yeah, sculpture.
Philosopher sculptor.
Yeah. Well, actually, last number of years I've done more writing, and it's great fun.
Mm-hmm.
For a fellow who flunked
English
in high school,
yeah,
and now starting to write, and but spell check is one of the greatest things that's ever.
Especially if you want anybody ever to read it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we've only got a few minutes left here. What is there anything else that you're working on that you're comfortable talking about now? Or?
Let's see. I did a couple questionnaires. The point when I brought up the idea of the questionnaire, the thing that I like doing so much is I enjoy working with writers, mm-hmm. because, in fact, I did a piece, and a very good friend of mine, Terry Hummer, who's no longer in Richmond, a wonderful poet. I did this piece. I had all the visuals. I asked if he would write the text. I told him what I wanted mm-hmm. in the text. That is, I wanted time to wrap in on itself. And he wrote this wonderful, wonderful text. And
time to wrap in on itself?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
It's not a linear thing. Like we think of time as something that just goes. And it just keeps going. And then, mm-hmm. But this is where time is not a linear thing, but it moves back. And in his case, in the text, there's two women, English-speaking French women speaking, and he brings up in the text things like the DNA, Roman sandals, straps on Roman sandals. And what happens in this particular work is that speaker A becomes speaker B, and speaker B becomes speaker A, and so it's one continuous loop where they change parts, and so it looks like a DNA sequence, essentially, if you were to visualize it. Yeah,
really?
So it's a beautifully written, beautifully conceived notion.
What's it about?
It's about shoes.
It's about shoes.
Which really, they're talking about shoes, but it's really not about shoes, obviously.
Right. I mean, what's it really about?
It's about time.
Just about time, and it's looking at it in a nonlinear way?
Yeah. The whole thing is nonlinear because they change roles. They just keep going. They talk about books, bibliotheque. It's a lovely thing. How I got into this is a good deal of my work. The ideas grow out of ideas in literature, not ideas in the visual
mm-hmm.
arts.
Mm-hmm.
I would ask myself questions like, "What's the difference? What would a piece look like if it was done in the first person or the third person?
Mm-hmm.
What would a footnote look like in a piece of sculpture?" So questions that are very kind of that allow me to think about ways of solving problems where I have no idea
how to do it. Yeah.
And so that's been great.
Just be a cork.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. That 30 minutes goes fast, and it's hard to squeeze a lot in, but I think you did. I'd like to thank you folks out there for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. Look forward to seeing you on the radio every first and third Monday of the month at 12:30. And again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRAR 97.3 FM, Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And thank you very much, Myron. It's been a pleasure.
Great fun for me.
Good deal.
Thanks.